Welcome, everyone, to week 3 of When Your Kids Push Your Buttons. Today's topic is, what do you expect? We'll be moving into the expectations that provoke our assumptions, but first we're going to stay with the assumptions a little longer so we can understand them a little more. When, if you look on page 16 in your workbook, this will just give you a sense of where we're going to be heading. So on page 16, you'll see a diagram of the emotional chain reaction, and this one is a bit expanded. So the box in the middle shows you what provokes the assumptions that we have. So some of you have been asking me, you know, I don't understand why I feel the way I do. Why am I thinking this? I don't get this. So there are several levels that we're going to be addressing. And today what we're looking at is the first level, which is the expectations. The standards and beliefs level we'll maybe talk about a little bit, but that comes into part 2 of the workshop. So the expectations that we hold of our children and of ourselves are what prompt our assumptions. And so the first thing we want to take care of, though, is understanding what these assumptions are and how can we reframe them before we start digging a little deeper. So the first thing we're going to do today is look at some of the work that you've been doing over the week since last week's Reframing Assumptions class. I have gotten, you know, a number of questions from you all, and I am understanding that there's some real frustration in trying to figure out, so what do I do? What do I do to get my kids to do what I want them to do? How do I get them onto my agenda? How do I make this work? Why do I feel the way I do? And we will be getting to this, but what I want to ask of you is to be patient with this process. Of course, every time I teach this class, parents want to know, what do I do? What do I do? What do I say? How do I do this? How do I make this happen? And the frustrating part of this class, this program, When Your Kids Push Your Buttons, is we don't get to the how-tos right away. We're looking at the whys. We're looking at the where does this come from? So it is a process that I want you to be patient with, and believe me, I understand the frustration. So I'm asking you to be patient with the process of the class and to also be patient with yourselves. This is the third time you've been hearing about this. There are long, you know, some lifelong patterns here that we're going to be digging into and looking at and seeing how they fuel us, how they trigger us, how they drive us. So it's just kind of settle in and be with it. Don't be jumping to why am I not making all these miraculous changes in my life yet. That's part of the process. So first, let's look at page 12 in the workbook, Assumptions Cause Emotions, what I had given you for part of your homework. And is there someone who would like to raise your hand? Remember, you do that by star 2. Who would be interested in reading your complete the sentence homework? Teresa.
Hi, Bonnie.
Right? Hi.
Hi. So the reason why I didn't raise my hand at first is because this is the one that I had the most trouble with. So.
Ah, right. Well, that's always a good reason for doing it.
Okay.
When you have a lot of trouble with it. Right. So tell me what you've got.
Okay, well, I've written this about 10 times, so I have to read through my scribbles. So please be patient.
Okay.
I wrote, when my children fight, that's the button that gets pushed. I feel anger and worry that they're going to hurt each other and that they don't feel safe and fearful that I don't have enough to give them the constant attention that they need. As you can hear, they need attention right now. but then I also feel rage, and I'm really not sure why. I'm just up here, sweetheart. One sec, okay? Yeah. And then it says, and I often react by, I start with ignoring. I feel like I give up. Like I just sort of withdraw because I don't really know the best way to handle it. And sometimes I just yell. So, sorry, one second.
Uh-huh.
Is it okay? Can you go downstairs with Willow for 1 minute? Thank you. My assumptions about my children when I see this behavior are that they're demanding too much of me. Too much of me and my attention. And I thought that they were just being mean to each other, but I don't think that was really the deeper issue for me. I think the more pervasive issue is that I feel that I just don't have, that they're just demanding too much. And then my assumptions about myself were that I'm not giving them enough, otherwise they would be getting along. And I can change my assumptions to be more accurate when I say to myself that my children are still little and they're learning to deal with their emotions, and that it's hard to share me, my attention, with each other. They fight usually when my attention is somewhere else. Let's read through all my scribbles here. These new assumptions, did I skip something here? Sorry.
No.
Okay, these new assumptions could help me feel more positive about my children's needs and my capabilities. And this is where it just sort of trailed off. I just don't know quite what to say.
I can understand this. And I got this from some other people, too. You want to make sure that what you're addressing here are your assumptions, and you're not jumping to trying to figure out what would be the best thing to do in the situation. So let's go back to your assumptions. They're demanding too much of me, and I'm not giving enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if they're demanding too much of you, and you're not giving enough, there's major conflict right there. Do you hear it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So when you think my children are demanding too much of me, start with that. That's what you want to reframe. I can change my assumptions to be more accurate when I say to myself that my children... And how would you reframe, when you think they're demanding too much of you,
Well,
that causes you to feel all those.
Yeah, see, I think I can see for a 2.5 and 4-year-old that the reality of it is that they're just being age appropriate. But it doesn't feel that way at the time.
Okay, so... Does that help you to think they're being age appropriate?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay. Now.
But then my guilt increases because
we're going to go to the next one.
Yeah.
I'm not giving enough.
Yeah.
This is the one that builds your guilt and your rage, right? I'm not giving enough. So when they're fighting, you're making an assumption that it's up to you to make to stop that, right?
Absolutely.
It's your job to make them not fight.
It does.
Is that right?
I believe that, yeah.
You believe that, yes. And I'm going to tell you it's not. Ha, ha, ha.
I'm having a hard
now,
time.
That doesn't mean, and unfortunately we don't have time to go into a whole sibling rivalry course here, but what this is pointing out to you is that you are taking full responsibility for their relationship.
Okay.
And that is their responsibility. Even though they're as young as they are, their relationship is their responsibility. Now, everything you say and do is your responsibility, right? So how you react to the situation is your responsibility. But when you react to it thinking that it's your job as a good parent to make sure they don't fight, then you're going to get all messed up in the emotion of it.
Okay.
And you're going to feel like a failure, because you will be a failure at doing something that is impossible to do, which is make them love each other or make them stop fighting. Siblings fight. Does everybody get that? Siblings fight. And they hit each other. And if you're going to have a standard in your home that children should never hit, then you're going to be beating your head against a brick wall from now until your kids are grown and out of the house. Siblings have a very intense relationship with one another. Now, I could spend time, but I'm not going to, Teresa, going into how what they're fighting about and why they're, you know, what it's all about, which we could determine, and I think we are going to do a session together, right? And
yeah,
we can talk about that. But the thing that's important to take from this exercise is that your assumption of I'm not giving enough comes from, and through the course, through the rest of the course, we'll find out where that comes from. But right now, if I'm not giving enough and that is what's producing my guilt and making me feel like a failure, how can I reframe that so that my guilt switches to compassion and understanding?
Go on ahead.
And maybe what we need to do is go to someone else and come back to you, Teresa?
Yeah, I'm okay now, actually.
You okay now? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not giving enough. Can you reframe that in a way that is helpful to you? Remember, you want to be more objective, less judgmental. And this part is about you.
Right.
So being objective of ourselves is difficult, but
I think what I've just come up with is that I parent alone 5 days a week,
mm-hmm,
and I'm finding it very draining and challenging.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way that I can think of reframing
that.
Okay,
so one of the things you can tell yourself is, "This is I can't do this alone.
Yeah,
I need help."
Right.
Right. And when you go there, doesn't that bring up a little bit of compassion for yourself? It may not answer your questions. It may not take care of things. But what you want to do, instead of judging yourself with, I'm not enough, I'm not giving enough, I'm not doing enough, it's up to me. And every time they fight, that reminds me that I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to just keep you going down that spiral.
I can see that.
Yeah. So I need help. This is too hard to do alone.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the way I would reframe that.
Okay. And that new assumption helps you feel what?
A little room there for self-compassion and a little less self-aversion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you feel that way more often, what might you be able to do?
I know that if I am not feeling so rotten about myself as a mom, that it's kind of like it does the opposite. It allows me to be more emotionally available, which is what I feel like I'm sort of fighting with them against, getting some space and so that I can give that back to them. But I know, I guess I'm seeing it's got to come from me.
It's hard to see, isn't it, that you need to give to yourself first before you give to your children.
Yeah, and it's very hard to see, especially when I do feel so responsible.
Right. Absolutely. And that's why it's the hardest and the most important lesson for a parent to understand is that you are not responsible for your children's emotions. You're not responsible for their behavior. You're not responsible for what they choose to do in life. You are, however, 100% responsible for everything that comes out of your mouth and every behavior they see you doing.
Right.
That's where we don't want to take the responsibility and we want to kind of blame them for making us mad and making us yell.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is take responsibility for them and their behavior because we've been, you know, basically been sold a bill of goods for generations and generations that we have to mold our children into who we want them to be. And that's where we get stuck. That's where we get off track and reacting in very ineffective ways.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Okay, Teresa. Anybody else interested in going through a complete the sentence? Okay. Yes. Hi, Annabelle.
Hi. Yeah, I mean, because Bonnie, you know, I emailed you with this question. I emailed you with a question about Callum tidying his room. And,
I'm planning on going through that.
Yeah, but it was this exercise that I got stuck on.
I
don't know whether to...
Let's do it, and we can work that through.
Yeah. So, I mean, it might seem like a small thing, but it really makes me pissed off. Okay, so I've said...
Let me say to everyone here, the things that piss us off the most are typically small things. So nothing is too small here, and everything is symptomatic, right? So... don't dismiss the small things.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so when Callum refuses to tidy his room,
and let's
I feel...
Everyone, Callum is 13, right?
He's nearly 13, yeah.
Okay.
I feel angry, and I feel useless and disempowered. I often react by... I just let him get away with it. And I usually end up doing it myself because it's such a tip. And I don't want to have to do that. Okay. So I don't shout at him. I just ask him to do it, and he says no. And then I go, well, I'd really like you to do it, and he says no. And then, okay, my assumption about my child when I see this behavior is that he'll end up... a lazy, useless, de-skilled man who depends on his wife to do everything.
Right.
okay, and my assumptions about myself...
And it's great to laugh, Annabelle, because sometimes when we're able to put it out there in words, say it out loud, we can see, oh, my God, this is what I really think.
Yeah. Well, you might. He might end up like that.
Right. There's no guarantee he won't. However, I'm probably going to change my mind.
Okay, so I feel responsible about that. Yeah, like Teresa. Okay, so my assumption about myself when this happens is that I'm useless, that I'm failing as a mother, and I'm unable to set limits successfully. And I guess, yeah, I guess I feel responsible for this thing of him ending up as this lazy, kind of good-for-nothing man. Okay?
Dependent.
Okay, so I'll go on, but then I got stuck a bit later. I can change my assumptions to be more accurate when I say to myself that my child wants to feel that his bedroom is his own space, and he wants to feel some control in his life and ownership of his room. Okay? But then I got stuck because there's still the messy room, and I'm still feeling useless for not being able to set the limit. And I still kind of feel responsible in a way that somehow it's up to me to, you know, educate him about these things and say, hey, come on, it's good to have a tidy room or something. I hate it when it just gets so messy and disordered.
Yes.
So I got stuck here, and that's why I emailed you. Okay?
So getting to the new assumptions is where you got stuck?
Yeah.
So when you, so your assumption is that he's lazy and is always going to expect women to do his dirty work, basically, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Which is catastrophizing.
Yes.
Which is what we do.
Yes,
right?
it's projecting into the future.
Exactly.
Something that might or might not happen.
Right.
Yeah.
So to get to the reframing, you want to look at the situation more objectively.
Mm-hmm.
And something that you didn't mention here on the call, but you did in your email, is that he actually does help out in other ways.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
A little
and
bit.
He's 13.
Nearly
and
13. Mm.
And a 13-year-old boy, the last thing in the world he cares about is having a clean room.
I know, yeah.
Right? Now,
I have to say, he's always been this way, I have to say. Okay.
Right. Well, it's your house. You know, one thing I learned with my daughter, who always had a very messy room, and now that she's grown herself, she keeps her place very, not immaculate, but she cleans it. She's very responsible for it. She's very comfortable in a clean place. She likes to have it clean. She told me when I was saying, you know, Molly, I can't even get over to your bed.
Mm.
She said, do you really think that I'm going to keep my place like this when I'm grown up? No. So we, again, we have to get, you know, a little more objective about these things. What's going on here is that you are catastrophizing, which equals jumping to conclusions, right?
Yeah.
You are seeing a particular, and when we get into part two and look at our beliefs, but also we're going to look at it this week and next week too, the expectations. What is it you're expecting and where does that come from? You want him to keep his room clean because it's really important to you.
Yeah.
You don't feel good when things are out of place.
Yeah.
And I totally identify with that. That's very much me as well.
Mm.
So when you see that he's not doing what you want, what makes you feel good, you're making giant assumptions about him.
Yeah.
And so what you want to do is to be able to get to neutral. You want him to keep his room clean. That's your agenda.
Yeah.
And when a button isn't pushed, you can see that your agenda is to have the room clean occasionally, not all constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But his is, he doesn't want to be bothered about it. He
could
care less about his room.
Yeah, and he says, it's my room, Mum. You can't make me. It's my room.
Exactly. It's not on his radar.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that he is going to be a lazy bum making women do his work for him. What that means is he doesn't care about his room being clean.
Mm-hmm.
You also said in your email to me that he hates vacuuming and the loud noise really upsets him, really
yeah.
bothers him.
Yeah.
So what I would reframe this to is that he doesn't care about keeping his room clean, but he does help out in other ways.
Yeah.
And so you want to see, if you think he hates vacuuming, it really bothers him to vacuum, then you're going to be a little more compassionate, right, rather than this judgmental anger and resentment toward him for making you do it all. That's your choice, right? Your choice. Another person, this is why it's so important to realize this, because these are our buttons, right? You know this is your button because another parent might not care two hoots about whether
yes.
he cleans his room or not, right?
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
yours.
Yeah.
And so the process is in owning that button, in owning that problem that you have with his room.
Yeah.
So when you're calmer and you're not assuming he's a lazy dependent, you can talk to him about your problem.
Yeah.
So something like, I know that cleaning your room is the last thing in the world you want to do. This isn't in your scope of what your mind is on at all. It's not only is it not on the top of your priority list, it's not even on your priority list. So you want to make sure that he understands that you get it.
Yeah.
And let him know, this is my problem. I have a thing about clean and tidy. This is something that I bring to the picture here.
Yeah.
And so I would really like to talk to you. This is where you'd move into problem solving. I would really like to talk to you about how we can make this work for both of us. And perhaps he makes enough of an argument so that you agree that cleaning his room is not necessarily something he has to do, and you will do it. You're not going to pick up all his stuff necessarily, but you're going to vacuum, do what you have to do, as long as he does some other things that he chooses. And you can say,
oh, okay.
list some things for him to do. You see, what your assumption is that he's not helping, that he's a slug, that he's
yep.
not ever going to do anything.
Yep.
And that is not true.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay, so we could kind of negotiate.
Right. But see how you can't do that when you have made this assumption about him that is the truth with a capital T.
Yep. Got it.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Bonnie. That's great.
Good.
Thank you.
How about the exercise, the homework exercise on page 14 in the workbook? Anybody want to have a go with that? I do have someone, Nicole from New York, sent me her homework on this page. So this is page 14. Her older daughter, 9. Oh, the behaviors. These are the behaviors that push her buttons. Her older daughter, 9, yelling when she said it was time to go and pick up the younger daughter, 6, who had slept over at her sister's house. And also, later in the day, they were yelling at each other because the younger sister couldn't find her Pokemon card and accused the older sister of taking it, which she did. And this was happening as they were about to go to the neighbor's house for a play date. Nicole's assumptions are that, 1, her older daughter had just had a bunch of friends over the day before, and she had arranged a lot of activities for them, which had, wasn't easy for her because she'd been out of town for her aunt's funeral. And so that's all part of the agendas. She's got it listed under her assumptions, but that's all part of the agenda. Now she gets to her assumption about her older daughter, who's 9. She doesn't appreciate the work I do for her. And I'm worried that she doesn't have any close friendships, so I put a lot of importance on making an effort to help her. And I fear that she won't have any close friends who she can relate to. Those are assumptions. She doesn't appreciate the work I do, and I fear that she won't have any close friends. Also, her daughters don't know how to work out disagreements peacefully because she hasn't taught them, and she's failing as a mother because she didn't fix her own problems well enough. She's setting them up for failure. Her emotions, anger, resentment, guilt, fear. When I feel unappreciated, I get mad. When I hear them fighting, I feel scared. So she had a lot going on her agenda coming back from the funeral. She was behind on everything, worked hard to organize her daughter's party to make it worthwhile, and she was just feeling very sad because of all the kids coming to the party, she didn't really have a close connection with any of them, and she's worried that she doesn't feel like she fits in. She had taken a day off because they had the day off from school, and she was looking forward to spending a nice day connecting with both her daughters. And the daughter's agenda, the older daughter wanted and enjoyed having time alone with mom and was disappointed when it had to end because they had to go pick up younger sister. Younger daughter was tired because she'd slept at her aunt's house and was missing her mom, and felt powerless when her sister had taken her Pokemon cards. So what she says here for reframed assumptions, and I'm glad we're doing all these reframing because I think it's we want to be very careful that, well, let me just read this and I'll explain it. When her 9-year-old resists me, it's because she has an unmet need. Instead of getting resentful, I need to calm myself and be there for her. When they're in disagreement, I need to realize I only make it worse by not staying calm myself. And she says, this is the missing link for me, how to stay calm. Now, these are not reframed assumptions. These are shoulds. These are expectations of her, of mom, telling herself what she should be doing. And they're only going to lead to more guilt, right? When we should on ourselves, we are creating more guilt and more difficulty. When you're reframing assumptions, you want to make sure you're actually looking at the assumptions that you have identified. Nicole's assumption, let's start with one. She doesn't appreciate the work I do for her. And, of course, that's going to lead one to feel resentful and angry and probably get very pressured with that frustration that here I am doing all this work for you and I don't get any appreciation back. So how would you reframe, she doesn't appreciate the work I do for her? So to look at it objectively, you want to realize that I chose to put a lot of work into this party because I wanted it to be a good party for my daughter. That's mine. Expecting a 9-year-old to then come back and say, oh, Mom, look at what you've done for me. This is really wonderful. I love you for doing this, is a little unrealistic. We have to realize that when we put a lot of effort into doing something for our children, it is our choice. We're doing it because I want to, not because my daughter is making me and then not showing appreciation for it. Another assumption she's making is that her daughter doesn't have any friends. That is going to lead you to feel maybe even panicky. She's never going to have any friends. And as we'll see in part two, this probably goes back to experiences that Nicole had in this department. How can we reframe that so that we don't get so hooked into the emotion? The goal is for you to have a little more compassion for your child and compassion for yourself. So if when I think my daughter doesn't have any close friends and she'll probably, that I'm afraid she'll never have any good friendships, that's going to take me into panic mode. That's going to take me into trying to make relationships happen, which is actually what Nicole said. She places importance on making an effort to help her daughter in that area. Again, that's not her responsibility. And when she does that, it means that when she's putting a lot of effort into making the friendships happen, the message on the other side of the gap to her daughter is that she's not capable of making friends. So I don't think Nicole is on the line, so she's not able to answer this. But I think where you want to go with this is that right now my daughter doesn't have close relationships. She has plenty of friends, but no one who's really she's identified with yet. That will come with time. Or it's got to work for you so that if that will come with time feels unreal, you don't want to go there. But to realize that she is in charge of her own friendships, what she is, she may be a different person than the other kids in her class and whatever, but she doesn't have any friends, really close friendships right now, and there are plenty of kids coming to her party. She can't, the girls can't work out disagreements peacefully, and so therefore I'm a failure because I haven't made that happen. So what that means is that she has the assumption that they need to get along peacefully. They need to not fight. And we talked about this in the last scenario about the sibling fighting. Siblings are going to fight. I don't mean that that is an always, but typically in our culture, in the way we raise children in these nuclear families, doesn't happen so much in tribal culture, but in our culture, it's pretty darn common that siblings fight, and they're learning a lot of things about relationships with each other. The fact that she wants them to get along peacefully also has to do with the expectations that she holds of how sibling relationships must be. And if they're not peaceful with each other, if they can't work out their problems very peacefully, then she's a failure as a parent. Again, taking responsibility in such a way so that I, the parent, am not able to disengage enough from the problem to be helpful. Do you see what I mean? So if I am taking responsibility for my child's behavior, for my child's relationship with her sister or relationship with other people, then I've got to make that happen in order to be a successful parent. You see? So it is a lose-lose situation because it's an impossible situation. You cannot control those kinds of things with your children. What you can do is control your reactions to them. So if you're hooked into the emotion of the problem, if you're upset in your child's problem with her, then you can't be helpful. You can't be objective. You can't be compassionate and understanding. You can't just listen. You're in your own head about all the stuff that you have created, that your children are going to be experiencing later in life, all of that mess. Questions about this? Anyone? Okay, so since no one is raising their hand, oh, here I do have Annabelle. Hold on 1 second. Annabelle, yes.
Yeah, hi again. Yeah, just a quick one about Callum tends to, at school, he's tending to resolve difficulties with fighting. That's what he tells me anyway. They're boys and they're not meant to, but they tend to, I think from what he says, they punch each other and wrestle and fight. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about this because, again, you're saying it's not my responsibility, but I feel quite kind of like, oh, God, what do I do when he says that stuff to me? You know, I come across with my kind of politically correct thing of, well, you mustn't resolve your things by fighting. And
ask him how he feels about it.
Okay, I'm going to write this down.
So how is that? How does that work for you, basically, is the question. It is not your responsibility. Now, that sounds callous to say when there might be serious bullying going on.
Mm.
But he's telling you that there's fighting going on at school.
Yep.
Right?
And he says that he tells me about what he does. Oh, Mum, I get him in an arm lock and I press that point on his neck and that brings him down. And I'm like, oh, my God, are you really doing this at school?
And then you want to say, how does the other boy feel about this? So this is where you want to ask questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to ask him what's working and what's not working for him. He's telling you for some reason.
Mm.
He's telling you about it for some reason. And if you're going to find out what that reason is, you want to ask him some questions about how he feels about it. What does that feel like when he gets the other kid in a headlock? What's the other boy doing when he does that? Is he, your son, getting what he wants in this situation? Or is he feeling trapped and having to fight his way out of it? You want him to tell you rather than you make assumptions about what's going on and then tell him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
okay.
I'll give that a go. Thank you.
All right.
Oh.
It's hard stuff. It's really, really hard stuff. And again, I want you all to be patient with yourselves and with this process. Any other questions before we move on into expectations? All right. So the question of today's topic is, what do you expect? What do you expect to happen in these situations? And what you expect drives the assumptions that you make. Is that clear? So when I expect my children to get along peacefully with each other, then I'm going to have the assumption that they don't know how to do it. They're not doing it. I should have taught them. I'm a failure. Where has everything gone wrong? Right? If I expect that siblings fight and they're perfectly capable of working out their problems, then I'm going to have a very different way of thinking about their fighting. If the fighting is getting too hard, I'm going to think, wow, they're really having a go at it. I wonder if they need my help. Now, there is a whole chunk of stuff I could go into about sibling rivalry and the triangle game and how to handle sibling fighting and all of that. And what I'll do right now is tell you that you can learn a lot about that in my second book, Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids. And it may, you know, we may get to some how-tos as we go along on here. But the most important thing, because I could possibly talk on and on and on about what to do in the situation, but if you're still making these assumptions about your kids and about yourself, you're not going to be able to put skills into practice. Do you see? So that's why this process is so important when you find yourself feeling out of control, when you find yourself knowing that you shouldn't, wouldn't, doesn't, don't want to make have the reactions that you're making. That's when it's very important to do this deeper work. Looking at the expectations that we hold of our children is another way of changing our perceptions so that our buttons don't get pushed. We want to become aware of our expectations and adjust them to fit our child, not lower them, although often that is what we need to do, but adjust is the word, and adjust so that our child can meet them successfully. I would ask you all, were you able to meet your parents' expectations? Or do any of you live with the belief that you're not good enough, that nothing you can ever do would satisfy your mother or your father? So many of us live with knowing that we have not met up to someone else's expectations, or we don't meet up to our own expectations, or our parents didn't have any expectations of us, or we feel very confident that we are meeting our parents' expectations, that they're very approving of us, we feel good, we feel in balance, all of that. When you realize that you're holding an expectation of your child that your child is having a very hard time meeting, then rather than increasing those expectations and pounding them in on your child because you're trying to raise his capability to meet them, you want to go the other direction. You want to realize that your expectation is not meeting who your child is. When you were being brought up, and your parent, if any of you want to speak to this, your parent had an expectation of you that you couldn't meet, what did that lead you to do? Some people might push ahead and work harder and harder through their whole lives, even well beyond their parents' passing, to prove that you are good enough, to prove that you can do what you'll never get approval for from your parent. Or another temperament will say, I can't be who you want me to be, so I'm just going to give up. Forget it. And they kind of drop out. So we go in all different directions of this. So it's very, very important for us to realize that the expectations we hold of our children must be set for our child's success. I'm going to say that again. We want to make sure that the expectations we hold of our children are set for their success. So that means you want to make sure that your child is capable of meeting your expectations. And that means really understanding their temperament, their stage of development, and what their capabilities are. The other thing that we tend to do is to make sure, not make sure, the other thing that we tend to do is to look for our children to be fully capable of what they are, fully competent at what they're capable of doing all the time. If you think of yourself and what you're capable of doing, what does it feel like when you are at the top of your game? What does it feel like to you? You know these times when you are firing on all cylinders. You're just doing your best, and it is feeling great. So then I want you to think about, how often are you at that place? How often are you firing on all cylinders? How often are you behaving at your top capacity? Probably not very often, right? If anyone is, please let me know. I've yet to meet the person. So what that, the reason I'm asking that is because it's so important for us to realize that if we know our five-year-old is perfectly capable of getting herself dressed, then we expect her to do it on her own all the time. And if she isn't, then we're furious. If my child is capable of getting an A in math, then that is what he's got to get on every test across the board. If he's capable of doing well in division, then he should be doing equally as well. Actually, we take that way wider, and if he's doing well in math, then why isn't he doing well in history? We just assume that our children should be at their top capacity all the time. Is that right? Do you recognize what I'm saying? And think of the pressure that puts on our kids and why they might often think, I can't be who my parent wants me to be. If I get put down for not doing something, for not doing all the chores, for not cleaning my room, for not taking care of my sister, for not blah, 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 whatever, then across the gap, right, your child is going to make assumptions about themselves. They're going to feel like failures. When we set our expectations, we want to find out what it is our child is actually capable of. I'm going to tell you, well, let me just read a few of these questions here I have first. So, what do you expect of your child, and does it fit with who your child is? Do you expect your child to behave like you did? Remember back in the beginning of this class, one of the identifying factors of getting a button pushed was knowing that your child, you would never have been allowed to do what your child is doing right now. That's one of the things that comes up in us, that how dare she? I couldn't do that. I could never address my mother like she's addressing me. How dare she? Whether we're consciously aware of that or not, it's often something that comes up. And so that expectation of you to never speak that way to your mother, even though you may have consciously decided, I'm going to make sure my kids can speak their mind. They're not going to be stuffed up like I was. Even though you may have consciously made that decision, as soon as your child does speak up with, I hate you, you're stupid, we're going to go into that. That button is going to get triggered, and we're going to react. What do you expect of yourself as a parent? And does it fit with who you are? Or are you trying to be who your mother was? Or exactly the opposite? Or something arbitrary, something not you? You know, are your expectations set in comparison with someone else who you think you should be more like? We do a lot of that. And if you were to ask your child what they think you expect of them, would your child say you expect him to be different than he is? Would he think that you want him to be different? So again, that message on the other side of the gap. Is he left with, I'm supposed to be more like my brother, or I'm supposed to be cleaner and neater in order to be accepted and approved of. I've got to make my mother happy, otherwise she's going to be mad at me. What are those expectations that we are unintentionally putting on our kids? The expectations that we hold of our children often come from the standards of behavior that we were brought up with. And they're usually unspoken. They're often just kind of go by osmosis. You know, there's just this energy around. You all know what I mean, I think, when you the expectations of you were not necessarily specific and spoken, but you grew up in a family where you knew that academics were very, very important. Achieving high grades was really important in your family. Or being considerate and kind to people was very important. Giving to charities was very, very important. We learn these things through just watching and living in the family we're in, right? So those are broader in my logistics here for the course. Those are the standards we were brought up by. Children should be seen and not heard. Children should do as they are told. And the expectations that we hold of our children come from those broader standards by which we were brought up. Is that clear? When I am expecting something of my child, I'm usually not focused on what was expected of me, whether that was appropriate or not, how I felt about that. You know what I mean? We just do it. We just are expecting. So there are five different types of standards that we have. One is a transferred standard, and that is a standard that has been brought intact from my family of origin. I'm just doing what I was brought up with, because what was good enough for me is good enough for my kids, right? A reactive standard is one that is in direct opposition to my family of origin. No way am I bringing up my kids the way my parents brought me up. I'm going to be an entirely different parent. Okay, that's reactive. Compensating is a standard that compensates for what I didn't get in my family of origin. So if girls weren't allowed to do what boys were could do. If I was told, no, you can't do that because you're a girl in so many ways, then perhaps I am going to compensate for that by pushing my girls to achieve, and making sure they know they not only can do anything they want, but should really excel. So I'm maybe going to compensate for that. If I didn't have anyone listening to me when I was a child, then I might compensate for that by being you all know the term helicopter parenting, by being one of those helicopter parents. I am always, always there for you. I am over your shoulder with everything you do. Here I am, here I am. And so that's compensating, and that means that what I think I wished I had when I was a child is therefore what I'm going to give my children. And again, none of these are appropriately set for my individual child. Another standard is a societal standard. You know, what we think society expects of us as parents, and that's huge. And in every culture, it's different. And then a chosen standard is one that I have chosen specifically and consciously in the present time for the child and the children that I have. What that means also is I have very different expectations for different children. Any questions? Anybody not understand or want to clarify something I've said? Okay, you're all very good, quiet students. I'm going to tell you a story that I hope is going to clarify this a bit more. There was a woman who came to me quite a long time ago with a situation with her 5 or 6 year old son. And the history of this child was that he was very sensitive and very very sensitive to his surroundings whenever they were outside of the house. He was an only child, and they lived in the woods, kind of far away from people. They were rather isolated. He was an only child, so his parents doted on him, and together they were this little entity and worked just fine. So one-on-one, even two-on-one, he was fine. But when he got out in the outer world, the supermarket, the playground, his preschool, the stimulation was very much for him. Another child, even in the same situation, would have been hungry for all that stimulation, right? But this boy was very highly sensitive. And so his mother also was a little uncomfortable around people. And so she wanted to make sure that he was very comfortable and behaved appropriately, behaved politely and kindly so that, and I'm putting this in here, so that she would be seen as a good, competent mother, which she probably was having some insecurities about. This little boy got to preschool, and he got into very difficult situations with other children and would hit and push. I'm assuming that if he felt encroached upon, he would push and poke to get people away from him. And he even started hitting his teacher. So this was a problem. And every time his mother took him into public, in public, she would give him a little lecture on how you need to say hello to people and reach out your hand and shake hands or at least make eye contact. And this was a little boy who, whenever they were in public, would hide behind her skirts, or if she was holding him, he would turn his head into her shoulder. I'm sure some of you out there have children like this. So she would then come down on him, not hard, not punitively, but she would say, it's really important for you to say hello to Mrs. So-and-so. And so this got, the pressure got to him so that when he was about 5, when people approached him, he would either spit at them, grunt at them, or stick out his tongue at them. Highly inappropriate behavior, highly unacceptable behavior, right? Enough to make us all cringe. So, of course, his mother got tougher and tougher with her expectation of him to be polite and to be kind and to just say hello. And so it got higher and higher. And then one day they were in the supermarket and a friend of hers approached. And so this mom turned to her child in ever hopeful for that lesson to finally be learned, for him to say hello calmly and quietly. But instead, he went over to the shopping cart where his mother's bag was, her pocketbook, and he picked it up by the straps. And he started swinging it over his head, jumping up and down, yelling nonsense words. This is in the middle of the supermarket. His mother's bag swinging over his head, jumping around, basically having quite an episode. So this brought her to see me. And I listened to her story. And I said to her that I thought maybe her expectations were a little too high for this child. And she said to me, but aren't we supposed to have high expectations for our children? And I said, absolutely, as long as they can meet them successfully. And I said, what would be a realistic expectation for your son is to expect that he's going to have a difficult time when you're in a loaded environment like the supermarket, where there are a lot of people around, where there's a lot of stimulation around. It would be an appropriate expectation for you to expect that that would be a difficult time for him. It would be an appropriate expectation for you to hold of him that he will not be able to say hello to somebody, and so therefore you would do it for him. You can do all the modeling, the hellos and the talking. While you, in your expectation that he's having a hard time, might have your arm around him, maybe rubbing his back, maybe rustling his hair, whatever would feel good and comfortable for him, so that your expectation is that he needs a little body contact to let him know that he's fine, that he's okay. And then to wait until he shows that he's successful meeting those expectations before you raise them. She said to me, oh, but that sounds so nice. So you see how we always want to push our kids. We want to push them further and further. And sometimes, and I think a lot of the time, we have to come to grips with the fact that we're doing that as a validation of ourselves, to let people know that we're doing a good job. This isn't about giving in And dropping all your expectations for your children and letting them do whatever they want to do. That's not what this is about. What it's about is seeing and really truly understanding what your child is capable of, and therefore setting your expectations accordingly, right? For Annabelle, I believe it was, setting an expectation for her son to keep his room clean was not an inappropriate expectation, but it was probably an unrealistic expectation because he doesn't care anything about it. Now, does that mean you don't expect anything from him? No. But you can see that that doesn't mean he doesn't help, and you can make some arrangements with him so you don't expect him to clean his room, or you expect him to clean his room maybe once a month with your help. It's your problem, right? So it's adjusting the expectations to make them work for your child and for yourself. Annabelle had said that her standard was a clean house because it was very important to her so that she can function better, right? So you see how that, how she feels about it, takes over the whole picture. And so, therefore, she's asking her son to take care of her problem, which he recognizes on some level and doesn't want to do, is going to be resistant to doing naturally. So that standard of a clean, tidy house leads her to expect that he should clean his room. In fact, should hold the same standard she does. And that expectation prompts her assumption that he's lazy and is just going to let all the women in his life do all the work. Yes, Teresa.
I sent you a question, and it was along those lines, I guess similar to Annabelle's. Mine was about brushing teeth, and so I think I'm a bit confused because, I mean, obviously I feel responsible for that, managing brushing teeth, but I don't want it to become a battle because I know I'm acting like a four-year-old if I'm having a battle with my four-year-old about brushing her teeth. And so I've tried to come up with a reasonable sort of compromise. I realize my expectations, you know, are that she keeps her teeth clean, but, and that's obviously not on her agenda. She's four,
right,
and she has no interest, but
right,
I'm not sure how to resolve that because to me, if I don't let her, if I just say, you know, okay, well, you know, try to empathize. I tried to say, like, showed her pictures of, you know, what happens with their teeth. You know, they get cavities, and for a while that worked, but I can't, I mean,
it generally doesn't work. Those, when we tell our children things that could happen, you know, that their teeth could rot and all that, they have no experience with that. So they have, it just flies right over their heads. You know, they don't understand what that means or why that should be a problem. And if they get it for a little bit, then clearly it's going to go away. So go ahead.
Well, so I guess I'm confused because I don't want to just let it go to avoid a battle because
no.
I expect that she should allow me to keep her teeth clean.
Okay, so you expect that she should allow you to keep her teeth clean.
I know it sounds ridiculous, that's why I'm
laughing. No, it doesn't. I just want to get clear, you're not expecting her to keep her teeth clean.
No, I'm expecting her to allow me to clean her teeth.
Okay. And are you expecting in that, are you expecting her to, so what do you get? What's the situation that happens?
Usually it's just avoidance. At that time of night, she just run away. She'll play anything, make up a game just to not have to deal with the situation. So, you know, I've tried making it fun. I've tried reasoning. I've tried bargaining. I've tried seems like everything. But, she's just very resistant to it.
Right. Okay. So, and this is consistent.
Very consistent. This is
right.
Nightly, yeah.
Okay. So this is not at all uncommon for a four-year-old. So it's kind of like the 13-year-old not wanting to clean his room. You said it's sort of similar. If you expect that she should allow you to brush her teeth, to keep her teeth clean,
mm-hmm.
and you're getting this consistent resistance, that's your cue that your expectation is a little bit off because she's not able to meet it successfully, right?
Right. So I guess I was getting that, but what I'm not quite sure how to resolve that.
Right. I understand. So if you see that, then you want to adjust your expectation a bit more. So your expectation would be better set at she doesn't want to brush her teeth. She never wants to brush her teeth or to have me brush her teeth.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Bottom line, that's the situation. So she's actually being quite lovely in her resistance to it. She's playing games. She's doing other things. She's trying to get you distracted. She's not hitting you and screaming at you to leave her alone.
No. Because
so
I don't force the
right.
issue because I know that just makes the situation worse. But
I still
can't. I feel responsible. Like I can't let that go.
Right. And yes, that is something that you are responsible for because she's not old enough yet to take responsibility for keeping her teeth clean. You've got to either do it for her or you've got to be with her and motivate her to do it because it's your problem right now.
Right.
So when you can hold the expectation, and let me tell you all about what I call the of course mantra. The of course mantra means you would look at this as, of course she doesn't want to brush her teeth. This is what you think of in your head. Of course he doesn't want to clean his room.
Bonnie, sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to mute out my side just because I think my son's crying. So
okay.
I'm
okay.
Still listening though.
All righty.
That's star 6, right?
That's right.
Okay, thanks.
So the of course mantra means it's a mantra for yourself. It's to get you into the head of an appropriate and realistic expectation for your child. So depending on who your child is, of course she doesn't want to get in her car seat. Of course he doesn't want to go to bed. Of course he doesn't want to do his homework. Of course she doesn't want to turn off the television and come to the dinner table, right? So what that means is that you, in your head, are getting yourself to that level of an expectation of your child so that when your child doesn't turn off the television, resists getting into the car seat, doesn't want to brush her teeth, then you're not going to fly off the handle. When your expectation is that my child should do what I tell her when I tell her, or she should allow me to do this now, or whatever that expectation is that never happens, then you're going to get furious. So again, this is another way of disciplining your mind and disciplining your reactions so that you can be more effective with your kids. It's not about letting your kids stay in watching television and skip dinner. It's not about not putting your child in a car seat. It's not about letting your child never brush her teeth. It's putting you in a place where you are completely in sync with your child. So therefore, when she's procrastinating and she doesn't want to brush her teeth, you're not fuming inside thinking, she has got to let me do this. She has got to let me do this. Because again, when our buttons get pushed, it becomes all about us, right? It's all about me, what I have to do, what she's doing to me, what she's making me do. It's all about me. And with a diffused button, what we want to do is be able to reach out to our child. So she doesn't want to brush her teeth. So that, of course, comes in there. Every night when I get to that point, I'm going to think, well, of course she doesn't want to brush her teeth. So, of course, she's procrastinating. So, of course, she's going to be playing this game. That's only for you to be calmer and more realistic with your expectation. When you can get to that place, then you're, again, in a better position, and you've reframed your assumption that she's, you know, I don't know, Teresa, what your assumption is about it, but it might be that she should let you do what you're supposed to do as a mother. And if she's not, then you're not doing it right. So, you know, that all gets you all mucked up in all kinds of emotions. So, therefore, you want to be able to respond to her. So then you can and look at the agendas. Your agenda is getting her teeth brushed. Her agenda is doing anything she can to avoid getting her teeth brushed. Why? Maybe it hurts. Maybe her, I don't know, maybe her gums are sensitive. She doesn't like that brush in her teeth, in her mouth, you know, moving all around. She doesn't want to stop what she's doing to take the time to do something she sees no use in. So therefore, you can talk to her at a time separate from brushing her teeth and tell her your problem and let her know that you understand that she doesn't want to brush her teeth, and every night it gets to that point and you're having a difficult time of it. And what would could she tell you that would help her, that would make it easier for her when the teeth brushing time comes? Yes. Who is this from Brentwood, New York?
Hi, Bonnie. It's Nicole. I was on the line before when you were reading my homework, and thank you for doing that. I was at work, and so I couldn't speak up,
uh-huh,
but I was listening.
Right.
But I am.
And Teresa,
you know,
I'll get back
now to
you in a minute. Just I see your hand is raised. Okay, so Nicole?
I just maybe want to get back to her first, but I just would like to know if you could draw a similar parallel to the teeth brushing for eating dinner, because that's a big problem that we seem to have every time we sit down to eat. They don't want to eat the food I make, and it's what definitely one of my huge button pushers is trying to get them to sit down and eat together as a family and eat healthy foods. And I feel like
so.
I've
do you know what your expectation is, Nicole? Do you expect that they should appreciate food that you have prepared for them?
I don't expect that, but they are 6 and 9, so I do expect that at this point we should be able to sit through a meal and not have me nag them to finish eating. Come on, eat your food, come on. And if I don't do that, then the food just sits there and gets cold, and then they don't want to eat it because it's cold.
Okay, so I am going to suggest my number one rule of the dinner table for everyone. Number one rule, do not talk about food.
Okay. Your expectation
is that they are going to eat their food. And for some reason that we could go into if we had a lot more time, they're not doing it. And probably they're not doing it because the nagging is happening. The dinner table should be nothing but 100% fun and relaxation. So your responsibility is to prepare the food. Your responsibility is to put it on the table. Their responsibility, and not on their plates, in bowls. Let them serve themselves. Their responsibility is what goes down the gullet.
Okay.
And those are very separate. So you may experience, if you are willing to let go on this, again, the expectation needs to adjust to they're resisting eating what I'm preparing. Of course they're not going to do this until I nag them and bribe them with dessert, maybe. And so it's a lot of these things require kind of a jumping off the cliff with trust. You're probably going to experience for quite a while that they're going to not eat if you're not making them. But eventually, then they take, you see, you're taking over their responsibility.
Yes.
And you need to give them the responsibility. And for a while, it's going to be hard.
What if I let go and I do that and they don't eat and then in an hour they say, I'm hungry? Or can I have a cookie or something like that?
Right. Then you can let them know what is theirs for the getting.
Okay.
You know, maybe there's a container in the refrigerator that has food in it for them anytime they want it. Maybe they can get some cereal, something like that. But you are not going to do it for them. And you don't have to go into a whole thing. If you'd eaten your dinner, you wouldn't be hungry now. Right?
Yeah,
you
that's what I do.
You want them to completely learn the lesson. So you've got to be very neutral about it, which means your expectation is going to be that they're not eating for some reason. They don't want to eat because they're resisting something, because I'm taking responsibility for them. So you want to hand over that responsibility to them. That's not yours. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And Teresa, yes.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
Hi. Actually, I was fine. I think that was a great response. I just definitely need to work on that. Coming back to her when it's not a hot topic.
Yeah, do a little negotiating with her. Let her know that this is your problem. And here's a very important point about expectations. Let her know that you don't expect her. Here's a twist. You don't expect her to think about her teeth and take care of her teeth at her age. Because she's not focused on that. She's too young to take responsibility for that. So when you let her off the hook with expecting that she's got to do something about it, whether it's allowing you to do it or her doing it herself, and you let her know, I don't expect you to take responsibility for your teeth yet. That's why it's my job. That's why I need to make sure it gets done, because it's not your responsibility now. It will be later. Right now, it's my responsibility. So therefore, I need to make sure it happens. So you don't have to think about it. But when it comes time to brush your teeth, and I need to take that responsibility and do it for you, or to make sure that you do it, what do you think would help to make it easier? What could we do that would be fun? Do you have any ideas so that we could get through it quickly and you could get back to whatever you want to do? You know, that sort of thing. Can you see having that conversation with her?
Yeah, I can see how that would allow her to have some control and some input, because I don't know why it is that she doesn't enjoy or want me to do that. I really have no idea. I thought maybe I was guessing a sensory issue, but I really don't know.
I think it's just because she's four.
Right.
Seriously. And she shouldn't want you to brush her teeth. You know, there are very few little kids who really look forward to getting their teeth brushed.
Right.
You know, it's just not in their, it's not in their agendas. It's not in their scope. She doesn't care.
Right.
So your expectation should be, of course she doesn't care about getting her teeth brushed.
Right. I think I was saying that, but there was a completely different tone. It was that the whole weight behind it was, and if you don't let me do this, then there's going to be a problem.
And
right. That's the message I was sending with those words, but I can see how what you're saying, if I change my tone,
yeah,
you know, how that should hopefully make a difference.
And the tone change comes from an understanding, you see, an understanding that it's not about having to use force to make her see something she should be seeing that she's not. It's, we are in this reward and punishment mindset, and we think that if the child isn't doing something we want them to do, that we have to force them. And to force them, we have to use punishment. We have to use bribery. We have to use threats.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can back up from the whole process and just realize that they're just kids and there's no reason they should want to brush their teeth, they should want to go to bed, they should want to clean their rooms, they should want to pick up their toys, they should want to eat dinner at the dinner table, unless it's fun.
So does that mean that, you know, like if tonight I try this and I don't get it quite right and it doesn't work out, to just let it go? Like to be like, okay, it's one night, it's not the end of the world, it doesn't create a habit, and we'll just try again tomorrow?
Yes, I think that would not be a terrible thing to do. And then I think you could say to her tomorrow that didn't work for you last night, that it is absolutely essential, important for you to make sure that her teeth get brushed, and you don't expect her to want to do it or to think about it, and so you need to do it. And so what would be, and then go over what happened the night before and see if you can work it out with her. Maybe you get some, and you put some time thinking about it too. Maybe it's maybe it's playing some kind of a game. Maybe it's a little role play. You know, maybe she pretends she's a princess and she has a servant who's brushing her teeth for her. You know, whatever.
Right.
But go into fantasy with it.
Yeah, I think she'd love that. Okay.
Yeah. And pretend, let's pretend the toothbrush is a magic wand.
Yeah. I think the lack of creativity, I think, has definitely been a barrier for my parenting, because I can see how, like, my husband does a lot of that, and it seems to work. So, yeah, I think I'm a little rusty in that area.
Well, it's because you get your button pushed.
Right.
You can't be creative. You can't be inventive. You can't be imaginative when your button is pushed and you're focused on what your child is doing to you. You know, you just can't do it. That's why getting to this diffusing stuff is so important, because then you can come up with all kinds of fun things to do with your kids, and your parenting gets so much more fulfilling and satisfying and easier.
Mm-hmm.
It is so much easier.
Right. Well, I'm all for easier.
I know, we all are, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bonnie. She's coming upstairs, so.
Okay, and I am going to end the class now, and let me just say that for work to do during the week, you have another practice. I don't know whether you looked at that before. I guess that was for last week on page 15. Then on page 17, take a look at this list of expectations and go over them and add your own. Check off ones that apply to you and add any of your own that you find yourself expecting. Remember that should, wherever there is a should, there is an expectation. And when you think about your expectations, down at the bottom of the page, I've said here, add always and never to understand how these expectations are perceived by your child. So, for instance, in the complete the sentence exercise, I'm going to just skip to the middle one here. The expectation my child heard across the gap was, you will do what I tell you to do when I tell you to do it, always. So look that over. Look over the example on page 18 of the complete the sentence and do the complete the sentence on page 19. And then I hope we will be able to read a couple next week. Then on page 20, take a look at the very short synopses here of the various buttons that I write about in the book. This does not mean these are the only buttons people have. There are plenty. But these are the ones that I focused on. You may have several of them. You may have one that really stands out. I don't, we're not going to go into all the separate buttons. But I think it's really useful for you to be able to say to yourself, oh, there goes my control button. Or, oops, here comes my fix-it button. Better put that in check. So you know yourself. And to learn more about all these buttons, the whole part two of When Your Kids Push Your Buttons is focused on this. There are three different stories under each button. Each button is described much more thoroughly. So if one or two seem to really shout out at you, I would say definitely read the chapters on those buttons in the book. And then there are also, I know there's a lot here, do what you can. On page 21 is the homework, so answer those questions about expectations. And, of course, the more you do this, the more you'll be able to hone in on what it is we're talking about. That said, I'm going to say goodbye for today. And remember, you can email me questions. I would appreciate it if they came a little earlier than the day of the class, because then I don't have time to incorporate them all. And I don't have time to get to them all anyway, but do send them to